This is All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery, from coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235, and let's talk about wine. Again, the phone number to call is 646-727-3235. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right. Here we are again. We're back. Thanks, bus people. Here we're back. Well, actually, I'm back. Mike is not here tonight with us. He has other plans. I missed last week. I had other plans. Actually, I didn't have other plans. I thought I was going to be on, but it ended up lasting longer than I thought it would, my other plans, and so therefore, I didn't make it back in time. I was on the road, actually, and when you're on the road, you don't make it anywhere in time. So, we're here now, summertime. It seems like we're having all sorts of issues trying to get both of us on the show and trying to get this show done during the summer. It happens. I've got things to do. Mike has things to do. It's bloody hot in Florida. We always have things to do. Storms, big storm went through today up at the winery. Wow. Big storm. Big storm went through here last night. Around the area and all that, heavy driving rains and stuff. Florida, so what can we expect? It's what happens when you live in Florida, actually in any part of this country. So wherever you are, you're probably getting storm stuff too and saying, yeah, that happens to me too. But got a show for you now. Got some information to pass on to you as always. No guest, I'm afraid to say. I don't know if I explained to you the guest situation. If you have any topics, if you have any guests, if you have anybody that you might suggest, email me. I will call them. I will try to get a hold of them and see if they might be interested in on the show. I don't mind doing that. I try to find time to do it. I'm working 7 days a week. My wife had an operation and she has been back to work. So I've been filling all the duties at the winery. And one of the things about finding guests is not just a matter of calling up somebody and say, okay, you're on tonight. It has to tell them what we do, all the information, everything, and then see if they want to do it. And most of the time, they're pretty convenient and like to do it, but it's not always able to get the times we want to get together. I'll call them on a Tuesday and say, how about this Thursday? No, I can't do it. I've got this. Well, how about next Thursday? No. And it's just that's what happens all the time. So I will try. I keep on saying I will try to get more guests, and I really would like to, but it's sometimes not always possible. So as we have missed before, but I do want to start again on this. I like to tell you every week what days it is and what's coming up. So then that way you can drink wine for whatever particular day. This past week, I hate to say, since I missed the 22nd, we missed a week of special days. Last Friday, the 23rd, was National Pecan Sandy Day. That's my engineer's favorite cookie there. Try to explain to her that the best cookie in the whole wide world is an Oreo, but she says it's the Pecan Sandy. But that was official Pecan Sandy Day, the 23rd. The 24th was National Prelance Day. 25th, National Catfish Day. The 26th, National Chocolate Pudding Day. 27th, National Pineapple Day. I'm going to have to harvest my pineapple. I got to pineapple that's ready to be popped off the plant out in the porch, and I need to harvest that. Yesterday, National Tapioca Day. I like tapioca. Today, National Almond Butter Crunch Day. Ooh, that sounds good. Almond Butter Crunch. Why don't we ever have Almond Butter Crunch? Don't know. Tomorrow, Social Media Day. So that should be, that gives you a lot to drink about there. Pinterest, Google, Facebook, Twitter. Well, they show all these symbols here, and I'm not familiar with all of them, but that is tomorrow. Saturday, the first, National Ginger Snap Day. And then Sunday, I don't have a thing here for Sunday, but Monday, National Chocolate Wafer Day. Tuesday, Independence Day, National Barbecue Day. Also, that convenient that it falls on the same day as Independence Day, since everybody's going to be barbecuing anyway. Thursday, or Wednesday rather, National Apple Turnover Day. And the next Thursday, a week from today, National Fried Chicken Day. And then the 7th, National Strawberry Sunday Day, and also National Macaroni Day is on Friday. So a good combo there. Also July, since I've already jumped into July here and telling you what's coming up, we have National Independent Retailer Month, National Ice Cream Month, National Picnic Month, National Pickle Month, and there's so many types of pickles out there that, you know, you can probably have one a day. Pickles are made from cucumbers. I don't know if you're aware of that, but my adult son and his wife, I mentioned something a lot about that once about, you know, after all, you know, what else can you do with a cucumber but make a pickle? And they both looked at me and I go, they said, what? I said, cucumber, pickle. And they had no idea that cucumbers came from pickles. So, yes, they do. And then also July is National Hot Dog Month. So, well, 4th of July. They always have that grotesque hot dog eating contest every 4th of July. Conspicuous consumption. All those hot dogs that they stuffed down, in my opinion, could be put to better use by feeding some people that could really enjoy eating a hot dog and not starving. So, but I'm not a fan of the, quote, sport eating competitions, unquote. But, you know, if you are, more power to you. I don't care. I just am not. So those is what's coming up. Those are the things that you can keep an eye on for this coming week or so to have a glass of wine. And there's always a good occasion to have a glass of wine. Speaking of which, the wine for this week's show is from Argentina. It is Val di Uco, I believe, UCO, Uco, Mendoza, Argentina. It's a 2012 Collection. Well, it's actually, it's a, I think Collection means collection. And it is. It's a collection of a blend of many wines. Cuvier Los Andes. It's Collection 2012. It says specialist in French. Oh, what's that word? I can't read this. What is this? Specialist in French Grands Crusso production. The Cavalera family has owned and operated Chateau Leoville Poitiers and Chateau La Crook in the Bordeaux region since 1903. Seduced by the quality of wines from the Mendoza region, the Cavalier family established its vineyard in the Uco Valley at the foothills of the Andes in Cordillera. Grapes are hand-picked and the wine is made under the same process and standard used in Bordeaux. Wine is aged for 12 months in French oak barrels and remains unfined and unfiltered. It is a blend of 64% Malbec, and it comes out quite well in the wine, 15% Cabernet Sauvignon, 4% Petit Verdot, 6% Syrah, and 6% Merlot. It is a product of Argentina, imported to the United States by Park Street Imports in Miami. It is 14.5% alcohol, and it's really nice. It's a very pleasant red blend. November 11th, was it? November 11th is when we, November, what am I talking about? No, not November. May, back in May the 11th, we went to a tasting, and that we didn't have a program that night because we went to taste. And I talked about it afterwards the following week. But this is one of the wines we tasted there, and we enjoyed it so much we grabbed a bottle of it. So that's from that. Yeah, reasonably priced too. It was I think around $10-$12. So if you see it, then it's worth it. Cuvelier Los Andes. It's out of Argentina. So, and I'll be excusing myself for sips periodically throughout the program here. Got some stuff to pass on to you. Most of the things I find is stuff that I find interesting. I talk about it because I think it's interesting. You might find it interesting also. I hope so. If there's anything that you find interesting or want to share with me, again, send it to my Facebook page or my email, All About Wine. What is it? All About Wine 101. At gmail.com, or Facebook page is all about our Facebook/allaboutwine, or you can call in 646-727-3235. That is our guest call-in number. It is Thursday evening, the 29th of June, and it is 7:12. So if you're going to call in, do it now. If you're listening to this any other time besides 6:29:17, don't call in because we're not going to answer. So, again, if you find information that you find particularly interesting or something, why does this keep doing this? Why does that do that? Okay, now let's get back to where you need to go here. Okay, there we go. Some stuff that I saw that I thought you would find informative, interesting. Anytime you have any comments or anything on anything that we've talked about, also let me know. I posted something on our Facebook page, on the All About Wine Facebook page too. China is opening up a new wine theme park. And it's, oh my gosh, what a immaculate thing. They had a picture of the main building and stuff like that. Gorgeous, gorgeous. They're going to have wine themes all through it and all sorts of stuff. Check out the Facebook page, All About Wine Facebook page. There is a picture and a link to all the different things they do on it and all that. It just, wow, really. That's the only way I can describe it. Just what they're doing is just something that you sort of wish Disney would pick up and do here in the States so that everybody here can visit it. But I'm sure they're going to get more than enough visitors there. Time for a sip of wine. This wine is good. It really is. First thing I want to talk about here tonight is this the right date? Yeah, it is. Where is it? I know. Oh, there it is. We've talked about Pierce disease, PD, in the past. In fact, I've talked about it quite a bit since it affects us here in Florida. And it is affecting warm areas around the country and around the world, and we talked about Pierce disease quite often, all that. There is a University of California, Davis, UC Davis, the Department of Viticulture and Enology, a professor there, a geneticist, Dr. Andy Walker, announced that he has 5 new Pierce disease resistant wine grape varieties that he has produced under his PD resistance breeding program. And he's now going to release the first five. So this is yay for areas that have Pierce disease. And, you know, they're finding eggs in Sonoma almost every summer. So it's not like we need to just say, oh, it only affects a few people. I mean, it's all over the place. These will soon be available in limited quantities to certified nurseries around the country. And the participating ones in California and the grapevine restoration programs. The five releases include three red grapes and two white grape selections. And they've repeatedly shown resistance to the PDM greenhouse and in field tests. These are also planned for future release and are results of multi-year research and breeding project funded through the CDFA, and that's California Pierce Disease and Grassy Wing Sharpshooter Board. So he said that the information about the five grapes and the certified nurseries that have the cuttings and plantings and all that are available this year through the UC Davis Foundation. The process is expected to take about 3 years to get the grapes out there and growing, and they're available to grape growers in 2 years after that. So we're looking at 5 years down the road. But if they're PD resistant, yay. These are wine grape varieties of the Vitis vinifera with Native American Vitis species that carry the PD-resistant genes. The new releases carry a PD-resistant gene from the Vitis arizonica. The Vitis arizonica, that's... I'm going to have to look that up, because I'm not familiar with the Vitis arizonica. It says the traditional breeding methods that involve the back crossing through several generations of wine crosses increase the Vitis vinifera parentage and characteristics up to as high as 97% resistance in the genes, which is, you know, phenomenal. The UC Davis field tests have shown that cultivars have been conducted in Napa Valley, Sonoma Valley, and Temecula in California, and also in Texas and Alabama. A Florida field test began in 2016, which it takes a little bit of time to get them growing. I hadn't heard about this Florida field test. Since 2013, Walker has advanced 19 PD-resistant cultivars to begin certification and release. And producing varietal wine from PD-resistant cultivars is what is an issue in producing varietal wine from PD-resistant cultivars, and what to label it and how to market it. It's as if we'll be unable to bear a commonly recognized V. vinifera name, such as Chardonnay or Zinfandel. He's working with, Walker's working with colleagues to try to come up with names that can be more common, more recognizable, ones that people can start understanding the reason for it. Yeah, boy, that's going to have to be tough, too. And I'm editorializing here a little bit, but that's going to have to be tough simply because a lot of people don't know about Pierce disease. And then you start saying, well, this grapevine is PD resistant. They're going, huh? What? Why? What does that mean? And then you're going to have to explain, which means we're going to have to educate a whole lot of people that are in wine shops and be sure that they know what's going on there and why they have to be PD resistant. Then we'll have to educate more people on Pierce disease. But there's a job. So we'll see what happens on that. He believes that these cultivars will be planted at sites where PD pressure is high. You know, the North Coast Ripion areas are in Southern California locations where you do have the glassy wing sharpshooter and Pierce disease. He believes that PD-resistant cultivars will be highly sought and accepted for commercial use in the Southeast U.S., where growers are generally limited to growing of currently available PD-resistant hybrids that do not have V. vinifera wine quality. So, which is true. I mean, you know, we're using hybrids down here, but they're not the greatest. The five varieties and their numbers, which I'm sure it doesn't mean anything because they'll probably drop those for a name, are as follows. And this is interesting. The first one, 07355-075, is 50% Petite Syrah and 25% Cabernet Sauvignon. This wet wine grape makes wine with characteristics of both the Cabernet Sauvignon and Petite Syrah. Commercial scale wines have been made from established plots along the Napa River. Selection is easy to break dormancy, early to break dormancy, bloom, and ripen. It produces relatively large berries with well-filled clusters of medium size. It has tested highly PD-resistant, 94% level. It has ranked highly at numerous tastings at both Davis and Napa Grown Fruit. Tasting descriptions include dark red, purple in color, bright red fruit, raspberry, cherry, ripe, tannic, and elegant rather than dense. So that may be interesting. We don't know what they're going to call as they start naming them. We'll try to keep informed. Next one, 09331-047. This is 50% Zinfandel, 25% Petite Syrah, and 12.5% Cabernet Sauvignon. It is a red wine grape, highly PD resistant with a 97% resistance. Commercial scale wines have been made from established field trials near the Napa River and from Temecula. It blooms relatively late but ripens mid-season. Medium-sized berries and large, well-filled clusters. It is a spur, fruitful, but typically has only one cluster per shoot and is more productive with cane pruning. Tasting comments include medium dark red with purple, berry pie, cassis, black olive, herbal, dried hay, coffee, vegetal-like Cabernet Sauvignon, licorice, round, modern tannins, and soft finish. These are good descriptions for a lot of good wines there. So let's hope this holds it together as they develop. Next one, 09356-235. This is 50% Sylvaner, 12.5% Cabernet Sauvignon, 12.5% Carignan, 12.5% Chardonnay. A red wine grape, highly PD resistant, 97%. Mid-season bloom and ripening period. Highly productive with large berries and loose clusters. Tasting comments are stated as dark red purple color, complex fruit with herbs and earth, plum, big wine, dense, rich middle, tannic yet well balanced. Winemakers believe it has great blending potential with Cabernet Sauvignon and has high levels of high quality tannin. I'm excited about these. These sound very good. Next one, 9314-102. 62.5% Cabernet Sauvignon, 12.5% Carignan, 12.5% Chardonnay. This is a white wine grape, highly PD resistant with 97%. Field tests in Temecula, Sonoma, and along the Napa River. Blooms and ripens early. Highly productive with small to medium berries and relatively large clusters. Wines are reminiscent of Sauvignon Blanc, and tasting comments include light straw to clear color, citrus, lime, tropical, gooseberry, golden delicious, apple flavor, bright fruit, slightly bitter, and textured. And the last one, 09338-016. 62.5% Cabernet Sauvignon, 12.5% Chardonnay, 12.5% Carignan, a white wine grape, highly PD resistant with 97%. Field trials planted only in Davis so far, but has small berries, small compact clusters, and blooms relatively late, but ripens mid-season. The vine has medium productivity. Wines made from Davis growing fruit have have rated well in tasting comments include light, strong gold color, floral aromas, apple, melon, lychee, pineapple, green apple, juicy, harmonious, and well-balanced. So there we go. We may have some PD-resistant grapes in our wines before long, 5 years or so. We hope so. Maybe we can be a step closer to battling Pierce disease, and it's something that's becoming a problem simply because it's moving north. I'm going to send that to my email because I want to share that. Further information. Let's see, I am not a robot, so I'm going to talk to you while I send this out to me. And so I can have a copy so I can look at it later. And okay, there we go. Send. Message sent. Very good. All right. So may have some PD-resistant vines out there that are grapes that we can start looking at. This next part here, they asked 9 sommeliers what are the most, what are the most underrated wines? Now, this is based on 9 sommeliers' response on this. I thought this was interesting. There's always the classic regions and varietals and always the classic grapes and the grape growing areas and all this and everything. Understanding the world of wine is going to be a lot more challenging than just going over and picking up your favorite bottle week after week. I had a couple in last week. What day was it? Sunday, I guess it was. Couple came in Sunday and they did a tasting. They said, "Oh, these are pretty good." I said, "What do you drink?" And they said, "Well, Pinot Noir." I said, "Yeah, and what else?" "Well, that's all." I go, "Why?" They said, "Well, you know, we know it. We go on. We always grab that. That's the one we get. That's the one we drink." I said, "Don't." I said, "There's so many great wines out there, and a lot of us fall into that type of rut." And I told them they were in a rut. You know. You start getting something and you just get it all the time and you enjoy it. You know you enjoy it. But there's so many others out there. There's so many types of wines and so many different. I said, "Have you ever had a Barbera?" And they go, "Well, no." I said, "Carignan?" "No." I said, "Carmenere?" And they go, "No." I said, "Pick something up out." They said, "Well, we don't know if we're going to like it or not." I said, "But you never know. If you stay with one thing, you're never going to know." I said, "So try others." I think maybe I convinced them of it. I don't know. But here's the answers from 9 different sommeliers. Stephen Grubbs, who's wine director at 5 and 10 in Empire State South, said Muscadet. That was his answer. No more explanation. Just Muscadet. Ellie Buffkin, assistant wine director at Malolino, says the wines of Corsica. She said they're very aromatic whites, and the reds of the island can be elegant and complex and age-worthy. So the wines of the island of Corsica. Kimberly Prokaisen, head sommelier at Rebelle, said Beaujolais, still Beaujolais. She said there's light-bodied ones, earthy ones. There's a whole range of Beaujolais that people are not really trying because people think of the expense and all that, but look for the cheaper ones. Matt Kaner, who is a wine director and owner of Bar Cavell, also Augustine Wine Bar and Dead and Alive Bar and AM and FN Wines, says, in his opinion, the most underrated wines in the world come from Portugal. You know, people think of Portugal, they think of port. But he said there's lots of great wines there. He had a good fortune to travel there, and every time he goes, he was so blown away by all the great wines that are available out of Portugal. Joshua Thomas, wine director of Activa and Francis, says Cru Beaujolais. That's it. Simple, easy answer, Cru Beaujolais. Eric Railsback, wine director at Mason Pacific, says the Loire Valley is the most underrated. Great values come from there. The Chenin is a noble varietal that doesn't get enough of the love as the Chardonnay and Rieslings do. So, the Loire Valley. Rachel Lowe, beverage director, Spagia, I think. She said the wines from Sicily should be some of the better ones out there that people don't really get. She also says the Balkan wines from Croatia and Slovenia don't get the respect they deserve. So some other areas there. These are sommeliers that are making some recommendations for you here. Victoria James, beverage director at Peoria and Cote, said wines from Switzerland. We don't hear too much. Little wine is produced there, and it's usually consumed within the country, within the vintage that it comes out. But the more wines are creeping into the United States market and are exceptional. So if you see a wine that has a Switzerland label on it, check that out, according to Victoria James. And the last one, Sarah Thomas is a sommelier at Lee Bernardin. Says quite a bit. She says the Gruner Wirtlingers and Austrian Rieslings have found their way back onto the tables. Blue Frankish and St. Laurent are some good wines and good regions. The Pinot Noirs from the St. Laurent regions are just really, really interesting and good. And there's a whole host of fascinating Austrian wines that she said that people are totally overlooking, and they should be getting out there and buying them and trying them. So there is a list for you. Wines that 9 sommeliers think have been overlooked. Okay, and let's go on to the next thing I want to talk about here. Oh, yeah. This caught my eye. I'm always talking about the weather, telling you what's going on in the different areas and what's happening in different areas and how much loss is being obtained. We talked about the floods, we talked about earthquakes, we talked about late frost, we talked about all this stuff over the last few years, how they've affected regions and vintages and lack of vintages. Well, a scientist developed a global risk index for wine regions. Every year, worldwide wine industry suffers losses of more than $10 billion U.S. dollars. That's from damaged assets, production losses, lost profit due to extreme weather events, and natural disasters. I mean, that's $10 billion. That's almost unimaginable. A multidisciplinary European-Australian team of researchers led by Dr. James Daniel of Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, or KIT, K-I-T, examines the extent to which regions are affected by the risk and how climate change affects the wine industry. And at the 2017 annual conference of the European Geoscience Union, or EGU, in Vienna, he presented his index for a global risk index for wine regions. It breaks it down. The wine region of Mendoza and San Juan in Argentina are exposed to the highest risk due to extreme weather and natural hazards worldwide. Kakheti and Racha in Georgia, that's the country, not the state, come in at number 2, followed by Southern Cahal in Moldova, I'm sorry. Number 3, Southwest Slovenia. Number 4, Uruguay and Ecuador, and Nagano in Japan, tied for number 5. Now, these are just the first results and first release of the wine index, and He, Dr. James Daniel of the Geophysical Institute and the Center for Disease or for Disaster Management and Risk Reduction Technology. Jeez. Of the conference that they put on. Natural disasters are going to be there, but he tried to do the studies carried out, and the index is developed in cooperation with seismologists, meteorologists, and representatives of other disciplines from KIT, Australian National University, University of Adelaide, Griffith University, University of South Wales, and University College London, as well as Risk Sclayers GmbH, a company located in Karlsruhe. The Wine Risk website summarizes the results of the study and presents solutions for the region. Now, if you want to check that out, you can go to http://www.winerisk.com. Now, it's not just a small thing he did just to see what's going to happen. The study covers more than 7,500 wine regions in 131 countries. There is no wine region in the world that is not exposed to extreme weather or natural disasters. So, you know, everybody's can be affected. Events such as frost, hail, floods, heat, drought, forest fires, and brush fires, as well as earthquakes, make worldwide wine industry loss more than $10 billion every year, according to conservative estimates. Okay, these losses result from damaged assets, loss of production, loss of profit, and everything associated with it. The cold waves, frost, and hail had the largest impact. Within the last month, there's been a major frost all across Europe and in England, with Slovakia, Bosnia, Serbia, Hungary, Austria, and the Czech Republic getting the worst of all of that. Hailstorms are a yearly threat in Europe. We hear about it all the time in the Champagne regions and the Beaujolais and Burgundy regions. France and Italy have had huge losses in the last 5 years due to hail and frost, with record losses in Burgundy and Piedmont. The hail losses of 2012 to 2016 have totaled 50 to 90% of the value of the crop in those regions, because it takes 5 years for the crop to grow. So 12 to 16, you don't have a complete plant back yet. Time for a drink. Thank you. Not just Europe that's affected by hail, though. It's all over the world. Wine regions everywhere are affected by at least one hail event each year, and usually multiple ones. It's just not unusual to have a hail event somewhere more than once a year throughout the continent. Cost-benefit analysis generally show that the premium wines should be the ones covered by hail nets, with insurance and other cheaper methods used for other wines. So there you go. You know, I never hear of anyone talking about hail nets. That's interesting. You get it. There's hail everywhere. Even here in Florida, I mean, I've seen hail come down here quite a few times over the years. Next one, earthquakes. This is the ability to knock out infrastructure of an entire wine region for a number of years. In the past, earthquakes have struck Chile, New Zealand, the United States, and among other small regions around the world. Over 125 million liters of wine were lost in Chile in 2010 due to failure of steel tanks. Earthquake-resistant design could have saved many millions of liters, but it's a gamble. That's same thing with mine. I my original vineyard drowned. It's a gamble. I didn't have insurance because, you know, wow, insurance costs a lot of money. You don't expect it to happen. Even small earthquakes not only cause financial loss, but they also cause loss by destroying tasting rooms and wine collections and stuff like that. Stabilization mechanisms, quake wax, zip ties or bolts can do a phenomenal job at saving millions of dollars of loss, and they are inexpensive as opposed to other things and insurance. Climate change. We have continuously talked about that on this program. Global climate change will have the most positive and negative effects on wine industry, according to this study. It says research expects a general shift of wine growing regions southward and northward, while some wine regions closer to the equator may be lost. It depends on the elevation. That's the key to that around the equator. But Chile is going to have to start climbing the mountains, I'm afraid. The English, Canadian, and Northern China wine regions will likely increase production markedly and improve their market share and production, predicts Dr. Daniel. The scientists expect that many wineries will master climate changes by changing grape varieties or harvest times. And they will profit from new strains, innovative technologies, and to optimize production due to biological pathogens and insects, they will use new methods to overcome that part of the weather events, the extreme weather events. So it's changing. The wine industry is changing as we know it because of this stuff. And other risks, brush fires, floods, volcanic eruptions, all this. The study also said that brush fires causing smoke taint to vines can cause loss. And the floods are being explored. Major volcanic eruptions wouldn't cause the largest global impact in energy, but the Lakia eruption of 1783-84, the Tambora eruption of 1815, which caused the famous year without summer in 1816. So that could potentially damage billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars worth of grapevines. Atmospheric changes, lack of sunlight, or global transport problems could cause major industries in the wine industry, or major issues in the wine industry. And other food scarcity issues would also be important. So all this stuff comes down. He said, despite all these hazards, the wine industry continues to grow and diversify through detailed natural hazard analysis. Winemakers and governments alike are prepared to adequately address natural disasters and help to face and to reduce losses. So, it's a lot more involved with it than what you would imagine. It's so much. The biggest wine producers in the world and their main threats. Italy, 4.9 billion liters, hail, frost, and earthquake. France, 4.2 billion liters. These are harvests from the 2016 harvest, all these. Frost, hail, and storms. Spain, 3.8 billion liters. Hail in the northwest, frost, and heat. USA, 2.25 billion liters. Frost, earthquake, and storm. In Australia, 1.25 billion liters, frost, storm, hail, and brush fires. Which, oh my gosh, I just saw in the news tonight the brush fires that are raging around the country. Out west. Scary thing. We get them here in Florida, but with the rains we've been having, we've been lucky this year. But you can smell the smoke hundreds of miles away. And excuse me. And it's just nasty stuff. So, billions of dollars a year in the brush fires. Something I want to just quickly mention here. Where is this? Okay. Something I want to quickly mention here. Vineyards get a lot of wasp, paper wasp. You see them all over the place. When I was going down the vineyard, I was getting stung, every day or so on average. But come harvest time, winemakers have grown accustomed to what the mosses leave behind. The black mold and spores combine for a distinct acidic smell, which is grape sour rot disease. It's an incurable condition which involves decomposition of damaged berries and resulting in millions of dollars of losses a year. And new research by Tufts University shows that invasive European paper wasp plays a role in facilitating sour rot disease in the absence of other insects. So paper wasps are part of the problem. There was no impact of wasps on uninjured grapes. The foraging of inoculated wasps increased the incidence of filamentous fungi, black mold on injured grapes, and the severity of disease in injured grapes. And the foraging of uninoculated wasp increased the severity of disease and the average concentration of acetic acid in grapes. So paper wasp, a problem in the vineyard. Tufts University out of Massachusetts is saying that that is one of the big problems in the vineyard with that. So let's go to this next one here. And this is a follow-up. Not really a follow-up. This is from Echo Watch, and this is a follow-up on what I was just mentioning. The index created by this have analyzed 1,100 wineries in 131 countries. The list says Argentina's Mendoza region is number one for earthquakes, hail, floods, and a whole range of disasters. But they also mentioned other areas that are bad. And the wine risk index shows places all over the United States that are moderate to moderate high to some areas high on weather-related problems. Particularly, and this may be surprising to you, but particularly in the areas of the Midwest, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, because of tornadoes. That is the worst region here. Other areas around the country are around the world are at risk, but most of those are from earthquakes, not just from things. But all of Europe, pretty much all of Europe is in the moderate to moderate high, some areas high risk index. So data comes from 1900 onward, and this is shows it all the stuff. But again, I mentioned the site that you can go to check that out yourself. It's worth a trip there. So go check that out. Let's see, what do we? Oh, okay. This next one is. Preconception is still a problem for East Coast wines, which is true. People think East Coast wines, and since we're in the East Coast here, we understand what they mean. But preconceptions, the quality of wines coming out of the East Coast, it's good. There's some great wines coming out. People don't realize it, though. People don't take wine from Virginia or North Carolina or New Jersey seriously, but they have the preconceived notion just like they used to have about California, but California was no good next to France. Now they're looking at the same thing with the East Coast. They're saying, you know, these aren't any good. But Cameron Stark, who started his career making wine in Napa, is now in New Jersey at Unionville Vineyards. And he says there's some great wines coming out of the East Coast. New Jersey is doing some phenomenal jobs that most people need to be aware of. It's an image issue is really what it is, he said, more than anything else. They have tried to promote it as much as they can. They've tried to talk about it. I don't know if you remember an episode, and I can't remember who the interviewee was, but I was talking to someone on a past episode, and I want to say it was the owner winemaker from a little small winery in the East Coast. And one thing he said, which was very telling, he said, people like to say their region is just like France or their region is just like California, Napa. He says, why can't your region be just like Virginia or New Jersey or Maryland or wherever you are? Why can't you just be that and know that you can make good wines from that? Why do you have to compare it? And that stuck with me. That's very true. I mean, you know, our vineyard is the same altitude and climate as France. Well, that's nice, but that doesn't mean that that's what you have to make good wines. So just preconceptions are still bothering. Finger Lakes area has been doing a good job. They're still faced with some preconceptions, but they're improving. They got some world-class quality Riesling, which I've always said that that's what Finger Lakes should do. Make some world-class Rieslings, and they're coming into their own on that. And a lot of areas on the East Coast, all the way up and down the East Coast, is getting more and more accolades, more and more recognition, more and more, yay, you guys deserve this because you are really making some fantastic wines. So, yeah, it's something that we need to... since we're here in the East Coast, continually search and seek out and buy the East Coast wines and compare them. I mean, they are as good, I guarantee you. Five most searched for Cabernet Sauvignons. I saw this and I thought, yeah, okay. But then, here we go, right back to California. California is the king of wines in the United States, and Cabernet Sauvignon is the king of wines, and California makes Cabernet Sauvignon in Napa, so therefore they must be the best in the world. Well, here's a list of the 10 most searched for Cabernets, and it's a love song to California, basically, is what they're saying. It's, you know, hail to the king, and the Cabernet Sauvignon. First one, Screaming Eagle Cabernet Sauvignon. This is out of Napa. This is one of the original cult Cabernets out of California. You can't touch it. Only available through the winery mailing list, and it's garnered multiple 100-point scoring. And it is, I've never had a chance, and I probably never will have a chance to taste it because it averages around $2,972 a bottle. But again, it's a cult wine. Camus Vineyards Cabernet Sauvignon. It's family-owned winery, been making wine since 1972, and they've got themselves a great reputation for cabs. I've had a Camus Cabernet, and it is phenomenal. It's not like something I have as a regular diet because you can't afford it because it's $76 on average a bottle, but it is very, very good. Scarecrow Cabernet Sauvignon out of Rutherford. There's another cult classic. They were grown in the Rutherford AVA. They've always been up in the upper 90s on their score every time they've been scored. And they also average about $694 a bottle. So you can go to Wine Searcher and see if you can't find it cheaper, but I doubt it. And if you do find it with somebody's holding it, be sure that it's been stored right. Camus Vineyard Special Selection Cabernet Sauvignon out of Zappa. This is the big brother, the second rank one. This is average score of 93 and a price tag of $172. This is, they don't come out every year on this. They just, every once in a while, the special selection. They did come out every year from 1997 to 2014. 2014 vintage was the last one that they've had, but they've all been consistently good. Schaefer Vineyards Hillside Select Cabernet Sauvignon. This is Stag's Leap District. It is always looked at as one of the highest regarded Napa cabs. Very well put together. Just some phenomenal flavors and taste. Black currant, black cherry, nice tannins. Stag's Leap AVA, $300 plus, 95 point average. Penfolds out of South Australia. So what is an Aussie wine doing here? Penfolds is known for its Bin 95 Grange, but it has kept some household names from Napa off the list. At $321 average, is cheaper than a lot of the other ones on the list, and it is a 94 score. Robert Mondavi, Winery Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon, Napa again. This is the wine that sparked California's modern era. It's available vintages stretching back to 1969 and outrageously expensive wines all the way through that available vintage. Dunn Vineyards Cabernet out of Howell Mountain. These two Cabernets, one more popular than the other, but the price tag is $139 against $93. They have an unbroken run of 34 consecutive vintages from 1980 to 2013, and there are almost all of them available through the winery. Conciliatore Don Melchor Cabernet Sauvignon. Another one out of Chile this time, Point de Alta, Chile. Average score, 93, and average price, $92, which is a good price for a cab that is the quality of this. I had this one years ago, and it's what really started me getting turned on in cabs. Silver Oak Cellars Cabernet Sauvignon, Alexander Valley. I've had this one, too. This is great. California wine that isn't Napa. It might sound odd, but this Sonoma variety is America's darling. Silver Oak Cellars appears on the list all around the country. It's relatively cheap, and an average price is $79. And it is very, very good. This is one of those two that I used to have many years ago that I've always enjoyed. So, a list of wines there. I want to mention this. Sam's Club. I don't know if you have a Sam's Club in your area or not, but Sam's Club is coming out with a wine. Not an expensive wine. Not a, I don't know, is it going to change the market? Who knows? Sam's Club, if you don't already know, which I think everybody in the world does, Walmart is only owners of Sam's Club. And in a move to a higher-end demographic, the Arkansas-based Sam's Club launched its first private label wine late last year and has now expanded the line up. It now includes Chardonnay, a Riesling, a Cabernet Sauvignon, and a red blend. The Reds were added this year, and a Sangria and a Prosecco are slated to be launched shortly. Now, the wines are going to price between $7.98 and $10.48 for a 1.5 liter of the Moselle Riesling and is available in 37 markets. It's not available here. I check the wine selection at Sam's every time I go in, and the wine is not available here. If it is in your market, if you know about it, if you've had it, let me know about it. I haven't had a chance to taste it yet. It's a relaunch of the chain's Member's Mark line, which I don't know if you're a Sam's Club person. Member's Mark is their label, is their private label. It's a play for the market share by Costco. Although Costco and Sam's doesn't really overlap. Costco likes to say that they're a little bit higher end, that they are their household income is $110,000 versus $80,000 for Target and $55,000 for Walmart. Sam's Club is just higher than Walmart. But so Costco has a little snootiness, and excuse me if you're a member of Costco's, but a little snootiness attitude about that. So Sam's is jumping in there with this wine. They're looking to see how it's going to do and what it's going to do. It's already in markets. And if it is in your market and you've had it, drop a note to us here at All About Wine, and I like to read what you have to say about it. And, oh, wow, it's 8 o'clock. Well, I think I have a couple more things to talk about. How does oak affect wines? How does it really affect wines? This is, as soon as it comes up here. It depends on what oak you're using. It depends on what, is it American oak? Is it French oak? Is it European oak? And in American oak, which uses in parts vanilla and coconut, as opposed to the French oak, which is hazelnut and smokiness. The American oak can change flavors. It can be anywhere from what they describe as a popcorn and toffee, while the French oak is a nuttiness and slight smoke. And different oaks from different areas. Right now, Minnesota oak is very popular, and it's given some great flavors to wines from people in the United States, wineries that are using it in the United States. And as is some nice oak coming out of Arkansas, Missouri, the Ozark Foothills there. That's always been the classic go-to, but it's great there. And Texas oak and Kentucky oak. So what effect does oak have on it? Well, it changes the flavors is what it does. It softens it. It depends on how long you let it set in the barrel. A small barrel will have more impact than a large barrel. Older barrels will have a lot less impact than new barrels. Oxygen will permeate the wood, which will cause a little bit of flavor change and stuff. So, you know, to say what effect, I don't know. You can go into it and say, well, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. But it varies so greatly on what you are using. Oak in itself is not just a little bit. Oak changes. It will influence the texture, aroma, just about everything in the wine. And so you have to be careful with it. We've talked to wine people before who said they've used oak in a sock, and it just overpowered them so fast. They were surprised. And so it just depends. So this article goes on and breaks down all this stuff and how it does and how it ages and what it does to it. And that's fine, but they're picking out one oak, one sample, one thing. Oak changes it. It really does. Oak will give you all sorts of different stuff in wines. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I have a lot of people come into the winery and I say, I make an un-oaked wine. And they go, wow, I love un-oak. I'm getting so tired of oak. Well, you know, it's just, I think people are looking for alternatives. And so if I say this is oak with French oak or American oak or Minnesota oak or Washington State oak, I think all these would that people look at different things too. What we really need is an oak convention where people can taste wines that have been aged in different oaks, and I'm sure it would surprise everyone. So, I've got dinner waiting for me, so I think I'm going to close. It is 8:04 here Eastern Time. I don't think anybody called. If you did, I'm sorry, but I was looking at it, and I don't bring up my switchboard here that often because I'm looking at other stuff the whole time I'm doing it. So that's it for this week. No events or anything at the winery this weekend. Tuesday, 4th of July. Be safe. Be careful. Don't blow off a finger. Don't injure yourself or others. Be safe out there driving. A lot of people are doing a long weekend. Tomorrow afternoon, some people are leaving tomorrow morning for their long weekends, taking 5 days there. I just saw in the paper this morning that there's a whole bunch, most government offices and everything like that, libraries, all that's going to be closed both Monday and Tuesday for the holiday. So it's going to be a little bit crazy out there on the roads and more people. I haven't heard an estimate from the AAA how many people, but it's always like umpteen million on the road. And gas prices are dropping out down a little bit throughout the country, so that's going to cause more people. The bottom line, be careful, be safe, and come back and see us next week. Have yourself a wonderful week. Have fun on the 4th. Don't overindulge and then drive. If you're drinking too much, stay where you are. And we will look forward to seeing everyone next week. Have a happy 4th.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, originating from Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridastateswines.com or call 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on the show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.